With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick. that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
On a spring day in 1987, a 15-year-old girl has an argument with her father and takes off on foot, never to be seen again. Police in the small Pennsylvania town of Blairsville immediately wrote her off as a runaway, but her mother didn't believe that explanation for a second. Now, over 34 years after her disappearance, Alicia Markovich's best friends are leading the charge to find answers in her case. They haven't forgotten their friend, and they want to make sure that everyone knows her name. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Alicia Markovich. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. This case was actually sent to us as a suggestion. As I mentioned in the intro, Alicia's friends are trying to keep her case alive and get publicity in hopes of finally getting some semblance of closure for her loved ones.
Yeah.
Because of the time and the place of Alicia's disappearance, it didn't really garner a lot of attention from media or from police, for that matter.
Is it because it's in Blairsville, PA? I don't even know where that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's near, it's in Indiana County.
Oh, okay.
Actually, okay. Yeah. So, a small area, for sure. So, yes, not a lot of, you know, not a large police force. But again, this was the 80s, and in 1987, like, if a teenage girl takes off, they were 100% like, oh, well, have a good life.
Yep. See you later.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, though, that it was a... So was it one of her friends that reached out to us?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, very exciting. So we want to do our part to, you know, help them get the story out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But before we get started, I'd like to just take a moment to thank the lovely folks who have joined us over on Patreon. I didn't do shout outs last week, so I apologize for that. Thank you very much, Justin W., Chris H., Serena G., and Chase. If you would like to join us, you can do so at patreon.com/ATTWGpod. And now you may have noticed that we do have some ads in these episodes. If you join us on Patreon at any level, you can get the episodes early and ad-free.
Nice.
Yeah. You can also get merch at our TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/stores/ATTWGpod. And we have that linked in our show notes.
Still waiting on somebody to come up with hats.
Yeah, somebody get us some hats. Don't know how to do that.
I want some hats.
All right, well, enough about us. Let's get to the story of Alicia Markovich. Alicia Bernice Markovich was born on February 20th, 1972, to Marcy Smith and John Markovich. Marcy was only 14 years old when Alicia, her only child, was born.
You said 14?
14.
Wow.
Yeah, but I've never found anything that said how old John was.
Mm.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what the situation was there. I do believe they were married at some point. At one point, she did go by Marcy Markovich, but I don't know when they were married or for how long. And by the time this all takes place, they were long apart. And also because of Marcy's age, Alicia was actually primarily raised by Marcy's parents.
especially in the early years.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
But John also had custody and visitation as well. Alicia lived with Marcy in Winbur, Pennsylvania, and John lived about 45 minutes away in Blairsville. Winbur and Blairsville, like I mentioned, are both in Indiana County, which is east of Pittsburgh. Alicia was smart, pretty, and popular. As a freshman at Winbur High School, Alicia was on the track team and had many close friends and a boyfriend. She was an AB student and seemingly lived a pretty typical small-town teenage life. I haven't read anything that indicates that Marcy and John had a particularly contentious relationship, but in the spring of 1987, the exes were arguing over child support. At the time, John was paying Marcy $100 per month, and Marcy was trying to get that double to $200 per month. Yeah.
That's it?
Well, yeah. And granted, you know, this is 1987, but I mean, even in 1987,
I mean,
that's not a lot.
Yeah. I mean, my dad was paying a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah. Right around the same time.
In 1987.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Dad.
The parents actually had a court hearing scheduled for this at the end of April. This argument over child support had apparently been ongoing to the point where on April 26th, 1987, Alicia didn't want to go to a scheduled visit with her father because she was afraid that he was going to try to drag her into the middle of this whole thing. And like, she was a kid, you know, she was in high school. She didn't care. She didn't want to be a part of any of this. But Marcy drove Alicia to her father's that day and spent the car ride reassuring her that that wasn't going to happen and that they would have a nice visit. And she told her daughter that if her father brought up child support, that she should just tell him that that was between him and Marcy and to leave her out of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you should not be dragging kids into the middle of that.
No, absolutely not. Later that afternoon, Marcy tried calling John's house, but she didn't get an answer. Now, this isn't something that like overly worried her. She was just kind of calling to check in, and she just figured that Alicia and her dad were out doing something. This was a Sunday, and Alicia had school the next day, so John was supposed to bring Alicia back home by 9 p.m. that night. But instead of driving his daughter back to her mother's house, John called Marcy and told her that Alicia was missing. According to John, shortly after she arrived at his home, he and Alicia got into a, quote, discussion about her grades and the, quote, wild girls she was running around with.
Her grades?
Yeah.
She's an AB student, you said.
Yeah. And that was like Marcy's first question. She's like, what do you need to talk to her about her grades for? Like, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was red flag number one for Marcy. John told the Tribune Review in 1990, quote, "It wasn't a full-scale argument, but I guess you could say I was preaching. She didn't want to hear it," end quote. He says that she left his home in a huff around 3 p.m. When he asked her where she was going, she allegedly said, quote, "downtown."
Where exactly is downtown Blairsville? I mean, is there a downtown Blairsville?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're using the term downtown pretty loosely, but I mean, yeah, I think like where Main Street, where the stores are.
You know, I don't remember. I lived in Monongahela, mm-hmm. which is, you know, an hour southwest of Pittsburgh mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere. And I don't remember ever calling it downtown, but, you know, we had a Main Street with a light on one end of the street and a light on the other end.
Right.
A gas station, a McDonald's in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I'm sure it's something along those lines. Well, John told her to be back by 8 so that he could drive her home, but Alicia never returned.
So they have this quote-unquote discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alicia leaves,
mm-hmm.
presumably in a huff mm-hmm. of some sort. And then he's just like, okay, see ya, be back by 8.
Yeah, I mean, she was 15, and it was, you know, a couple of hours in on like a Sunday afternoon. I mean, I think that in and of itself isn't completely crazy. Like, she was old enough, and, you know, again, it's the 80s in a small town. Like, it's normal, I think, for kids to go off and kind of do their own thing. Like, yeah, it was after a fight, but, you know, I from what I understood, like, she knew people in Blairsville, like, she had friends there. It seemed reasonable that she would just want to take off and go somewhere else to cool down. But when 8 p.m. came and went, John says that he started calling around to people she knew, but no one had seen her. He then got into his car and drove to the Noss Trailer Park, which is where he had lived when he first moved to Blairsville. Now, everyone there knew Alicia, but again, no one had seen her that day. John says that he drove around some more looking for his daughter, and when he didn't find her, he called her mother. And I cannot nail down the timing of this, because the one article that I read, he was quoted as saying that she left around 3, but most reports say that she was last seen at around 4:30.
Okay.
But also, you know, he says he goes and starts driving around looking for her, calling around at 8.
At 8, right.
Right. And, you know, doesn't find her, calls her mom, calls Marcy. But I've read 2 different articles where Marcy has said that she didn't get a call until like 1 a.m.
Oh,
and she
really?
Was already asleep.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So again, it's the timeline's a little squishy on this, and that's, we often see that in
sure.
older cases.
Yeah.
But yeah, it
I mean, the disparity of 9 p.m. versus 1 a.m.
Yeah.
is huge. And I also, that's interesting that she would just, after Alicia never came home, that she would just go to sleep.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's one of those things where like Marcy typically went to bed early and like said, oh, well, she'll be home at 9. Maybe it was 9:30. She wasn't home, but that wasn't too late. And she just kind of fell asleep.
Yeah.
Or if she had been like trying to get a hold of John and see what was going on. I haven't read anything that said that she was trying to call him.
Okay.
Just that he called her. At 1 a.m.
At some point.
Yeah, at some point. And I did read 2 different sources that said 1 a.m. So, yeah, I don't know. And one of those was like a direct quote from Marcy.
That's a lot of time to account for.
It is.
I'm curious, what are his surroundings like from his house? Is it a single family home?
Yes. In a neighborhood, but right by a highway.
Okay. So it is in a neighborhood, though. It's not like a single house on a street, you know?
Right, yeah.
I was just wondering how rural this area is.
Yeah, rural, but not incredibly rural. There are other houses.
And it was daylight when she left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just trying to set the scene.
Now, Alicia was not the type to run away or even go over to a friend's house without contacting anyone, but John and Marcy figured that that was the most reasonable explanation. They figured she was just cooling off and would return in the morning.
I guess it was the 80s, different time?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess different time now in the sense that everybody has cell phones.
Exactly.
So we're constantly connected regardless.
Yeah. So it's different if you can't reach your child now as opposed to in 1987.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, she's 15.
Yeah. And she had friends there and, you know, whatever. And yes, she had never done this before, but, you know, hey, there's a first time for everything, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And 15 is a good time to start your rebellious phase. But like I mentioned before, the next day, April 27th, was a Monday and Alicia had school. So when she hadn't returned or contacted anyone by the next morning, John Markovich did call the police. An officer came and took a report, but as soon as John mentioned the argument, he was basically like, all right, gotcha, run away. Looks like I'm going to beat the traffic and get home early today. Though she was quickly listed with NCMEC as an endangered runaway, police and the media didn't really pay attention to runaway teenagers in 1987. In fact, I was only able to find 3 very brief newspaper mentions of her at all that year.
Wow.
And this, of course, would be frustrating if she had just taken off, but Marcy and Alicia's friends didn't believe that for a second. Marcy and Alicia were really close. I mean, they basically grew up together.
Yeah. Well, and it also seems like she's got an infrastructure
exactly.
in both towns. She has friends in both towns. She has family in both towns. Like, it doesn't make any sense to just disappear.
Right, and not tell anybody from either town. Because honestly,
she's also 15 years old, so she would need help if she was running away.
Right, and that's the benefit of living with divorced parents, is if like you get mad at one, you can go over to the others.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, it doesn't make sense that you wouldn't take advantage of that and just split altogether. But to your point, her life in Winbur was good, and her friends there described Alicia as a homebody. She wasn't someone who was either unhappy with her life or like seeking some grand adventure or anything like that. John did believe that Alicia ran away that afternoon, but that she wasn't staying gone out of her own volition. This was his theory as told to the Tribune Review in 1990. And I have to read this entire thing word for word because it is a doozy. Quote, "I think she started out as a runaway, but then something happened to her. You hear about these white slavery rings where girls are kidnapped and sold overseas to the highest bidder. Well, I think that's maybe what happened to Alicia. But knowing her, she tried to make the best out of any situation. She probably got herself some old rich swami, and maybe she'll show up here someday covered with jewels driving a big Lincoln Continental and say, 'Hi, Daddy dearest.' At least that's what I would like to think. Sometimes you've got to half joke about something like this to keep your sanity." End quote.
Was he the author of Taken? Did he write the screenplay for that?
Dude, I don't know. Well, he certainly isn't Liam Neeson in this situation.
Clearly not.
Yeah. You know, I love an inappropriate joke, and I, but.
Probably not giving
dear
it
Lord.
To a newspaper reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that is quite a theory.
Yeah. With no evidence of it. And I can't imagine that the white slave traders, quote unquote, are hunting around, you know, Blairsville, PA.
Yeah.
Probably going to New York if that's even a thing.
Yeah. And then taking her overseas. Like, what? Anyway, Marcy also has a theory that's much less complicated. She told the paper, quote, "I'm convinced there was some sort of battle between Alicia and her father that day in the house. Whether it was on purpose or an accident, I think something happened to Alicia in that house," end quote.
Now, is there anybody else living in the house?
So this is actually interesting because I do not believe there was anybody there that day. However, John is currently married.
Okay.
And I have read things from his friends that say that they think that his now wife, then girlfriend, did actually live there at the time.
Okay.
But I have not confirmed that.
All right.
But either way, the story John gave just did not make sense to Marcy. Alicia was smart and made A's and B's in school. And again, like we said, so like, why would they have gotten into an argument about grades? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
If his story was, we got into an argument about child support, then
that,
she would have been like, okay,
yeah,
like that is exactly what Alicia was afraid of.
Yeah.
John, of course, denied any involvement, saying, quote, "I guess I don't blame them," meaning police. Quote, "Nobody knows that she got to my house that day. Nobody saw her at my house, and nobody saw her leave my house. I guess if I were the police, I'd think the same thing. But I never hurt my daughter," end quote.
He seems to, I mean, I know that this is, these interviews and quotes are from a couple of years after, but he seems to be handling this rather nonchalantly.
Yeah.
Like, a little too casual for a father whose daughter is missing.
Right. And again, like, I hate to ascribe, like, oh, this is how you should be acting, you know, because again...
No, but to come up with that bonkers theory?
Yeah, no, that theory was insane.
Like, where do you even get that?
I have no idea. But regardless of what police may or may not have suspected happened to Alicia, it doesn't really sound like there was much of an investigation in the first years after her disappearance. Blairsville police, who originally took the call, turned the investigation over to Pennsylvania State Police almost immediately. And Pennsylvania State Police searched John's house, but came up with nothing.
Okay.
So again, you know, Marcy's theory is that something happened to Alicia in that house, but it doesn't appear that there's any evidence of that.
Right.
Then after Alicia didn't return for 3 years, Pennsylvania State Police said publicly that they believed she met with foul play on the day she disappeared and upgraded her case to criminal homicide. And that's why we have all these newspaper articles in 1990, because that's basically when this happened.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, despite this change, nothing much really happened with Alicia's case for the next 10 years. Though I did find one interesting tidbit of information that wasn't reported on. Apparently, at some point during this time, this like 10 years, you know, this 10-year period, police asked John to take a polygraph. And that's something we see all the time in missing children's cases. The police often ask the parents and other close family members to take polygraph tests. but John refused. What's more, he allegedly refused 19 times.
Give any reason for those refusals?
Not that I know of. I'm sure he did, but not that I know of. I reached out to Alicia's friend, Lori Heiner, who runs the Justice for Alicia Markovich Twitter account to see if she could confirm this. And she said that not only was this what Marcy had told her, but Lori herself had also had it confirmed by a Pennsylvania state trooper years ago. But other than general suspicion, investigators didn't receive any solid leads until 2000, 13 years after Alicia's disappearance. That October, John Markovich told police that he had received a disturbing letter in the mail. The writer of the letter, which was postmarked from Bedford, New Hampshire, confessed to killing Alicia and even said where her body could be found. Since this was the first lead that investigators had had in years, they jumped onto it.
Yeah, sure.
Based on the information in the letter, they took cadaver dogs and searched a portion of the Conemaugh Riverbank outside of Blairsville, but found nothing. They also went up to Bedford, New Hampshire to question a person whose name appeared on the letter. But this person said that they didn't send the letter. They had never heard of Alicia, her family, or Blairsville, Pennsylvania, for that matter.
I mean, one small town to another. Who's ever heard of Bedford, New Hampshire?
Yeah. After hitting dead ends, police released a few excerpts from the letter to see if that would help. In it, the writer said that they got the idea to write the letter, quote, "When I saw by chance an old missing persons flyer posted on the side of a mailbox in Philadelphia. The second time I saw it, it was like everything faded to gray. Nothing seemed real for a long time. I had thought it had all been forever buried," end quote.
Wait, this is an excerpt
from the letter.
So whoever wrote the letter is saying that they saw a missing persons flyer for Alicia in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And then wrote the letter 13 years later. Or saw the missing persons flyer 13 years later. And
yeah,
then...
I think they saw it 13 years later because, you know, he said, or he or she, we don't know, said that I had thought it had all been forever buried.
How did the writer of the letter get his address to send it to John?
No idea. I mean, I think it was pretty public. Like, I think that you could have figured it out pretty easily based on the newspaper stories because his house was the last place she was seen. So I do believe his address was printed kind of out
somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. It seems rather strange and fishy to me that he has the letter.
That John has the letter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, police came to believe that the letter was a hoax. Now, interestingly, as I was doing research for this case, there was someone on Web Sleuths, a user who goes by the name Morph13, who connected the letter to similar letters sent in two other cases of missing and murdered women, all in different states. These letters were all mailed to the family members of the victims and said to look near a body of water for the bodies. Interestingly, all three of these letters were mailed from the same 3-square-mile radius in New Hampshire. So this Web Sleuths member took this information to police and said that, like, yeah, they like actually looked into it and then came to believe that it was a single hoaxer who was responsible for all three of these letters.
That's interesting.
Yeah. People are nuts.
Yeah. And we've covered that in some of our previous cases too.
Like, what is wrong with people?
It's the need to insert themselves into these cases.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something there mentally where they just need to be a part of something.
On April 26th, 2011, police held a press conference on the 24th anniversary of Alicia's disappearance. They did so because they wanted to re-interview people who were interviewed at the start of the investigation, as well as people who were never interviewed, like classmates and teachers. So, I mean, honestly, this original investigation, I don't think anybody was really talked to. Like, I don't think any of Alicia's friends were really talked to. Teachers weren't.
Well, it's just like you said, they classified her as a runaway and kind of washed their hands of the situation.
Yeah.
And then by the time the state police took over, I mean, maybe they did a more thorough investigation, but this was 1987. Yeah. So I'm sure they either didn't keep good records of it or they just didn't put it out to the public as far as what they had done.
Right. And, you know, they did, again, Pennsylvania State Police did search John's house pretty quickly after Alicia's disappearance. But like, I never read anything that said that they searched his cars or anything else, right?
The neighborhood,
like
the woods, nothing, surrounding.
Nothing like that. And
interviewed any people in town, seeing if there was any witnesses on the highway.
Exactly. Like yeah, nothing like that. So I think that they went to his house, and when they saw that it wasn't like covered in blood, they're like, all right, well, she's not here. Doesn't look like she was murdered. Like, bye.
And again, we don't know.
No, we don't know for sure.
And
but
state police are pretty tight-lipped about their investigations. Yeah.
But again, the investigators who had this in 2011 did seem like, you know, they're like, okay, there might be some gaps that we can perhaps fill in this investigation.
So is this Pennsylvania State Police again?
Mm-hmm.
But cold case detectives, obviously?
I would assume, yeah.
Okay.
So Marcy was in attendance at this press conference, but John was not. His current wife, who I mentioned earlier, did attend, though. She said that John couldn't come because he was working.
Again, yeah. rather nonchalant about his missing daughter.
Yeah. Interestingly, he's in the mining industry.
I mean, that's not surprising. It's Western PA.
Yeah. Also interesting is at the time of this, he and his wife were living in Ohio.
Oh.
But he still has the house in Pennsylvania. Around this time, 2011, the use of DNA evidence in police investigations was growing, and Marcy still had some of Alicia's baby teeth.
Oh.
Yeah.
Creepy. But
yeah, but
I just think keeping teeth in general is creepy. I know you have a bunch of our kids' teeth.
No, not anymore. I honestly think I tossed them when we moved, but like, yeah, when our kids would lose teeth, I didn't know what to do with them. And so I would like, after we did the tooth fairy thing, I would like toss them in my nightstand. And I know.
It was gross.
Yeah, I know it was gross, but like, I didn't know what else to do with them. But so like, I just buried them in our nightstand. And so, yeah, I had a nightstand full of teeth when we moved last year. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's cool thing.
Well, I guess maybe this is
now I should have kept them because this allowed for Alicia's DNA profile to be uploaded to CODIS so she can be matched with any potential Jane Does whose bodies are found. As of now, this has not happened, but several possibilities have been ruled out.
Meaning
like there have been Jane Does who have been found that matched her general description.
Gotcha.
And they were able to rule her out based on her DNA. Gotcha. So, I mean, that's incredibly helpful. Like,
yeah, no, absolutely it is.
Yeah. Now, another decade goes by. Suddenly, it's 2021, and Alicia's friends ended up taking up her cause. So this whole started with Facebook, obviously, because that's generally how these things start.
Sure.
Marcy just one day posted a photo of Alicia on Facebook with the caption, quote, "I miss my baby girl," end quote. Now, this led her neighbor, Marcy's neighbor, to encourage her to take up the search again, which led to Alicia's friends, Lori Heiner and Chrissy Boyer, deciding, yeah, like, we'll help you do this. So they held a fundraiser and raised enough money to put up a billboard with Alicia's photo on it. They also made a website. They did the Twitter account that I mentioned before. They've got an Instagram, Facebook group, everything. This billboard wasn't just randomly placed either. And you'll love this because you always love it. It was very intentionally placed on Route 22, just steps away from John Markovich's home in Blairsville.
Route 22?
Uh-huh.
I've driven that road like 100 times.
Yeah, so that's the highway that is literally like, he is on Route 22. It is right there.
How do I not know where Blairsville is then?
I'm sure you've driven through it.
I must have.
Yeah.
That's on the way up to Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, he doesn't live in that house currently, but he does still own it. The placement of this home right on Route 22 does bring up another possibility of what happened to Alicia. Was she abducted from the highway?
You said that the highway is nearby the home.
Like right across the street. It's right there.
Hmm.
I mean, maybe she did leave her father's house of her own volition and was either planning on coming back or potentially decided to hitchhike. Like, either way, I mean, it is a possibility that she was picked up by someone and then murdered. The problem is that there's just no evidence either way.
Right.
But hopefully that's going to change. As soon as the billboard went up, tips started coming in. Christy Boyer told WTAE, quote, "We constantly get things every day through emails or someone's calling us and saying, I talked to this guy and he said this. I ask if they'll talk and they can be anonymous. I never thought we'd get this far," end quote. And I mentioned the friends also started a website, which will be linked on our blog and in the show notes, as well as accounts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Lori Heiner is asking the public to join their efforts for awareness by following the Original Justice for Alicia Markovich Facebook group, which we'll also link in our blog and in the show notes. Lori Heiner told reporters why it was important for her to help find her lost friend. Quote, "We just decided, you know what, Marcy? She never really had anybody to stand beside her to help her do all of this," end quote.
I want to talk a little bit about Route 22, or can you pull up a picture of a map of his house,
yeah,
where his house is?
Yep, absolutely.
Because what I'm envisioning for Route 22, like, it's not an easily accessible highway. Now, I'm sure that there are portions of it that are, or were, back in 1987, but it's a much busier street than just somebody wouldn't casually be walking down it, if that makes sense. But
yeah,
again, 1987 maybe was different, but I just want to see how close the road actually is to his house.
Yeah, let me check.
Okay, so it's not what I was envisioning. That is very close to the actual road, to the actual 22.
Yeah, it's like right on there.
Yeah, I just, in my head, 22 is a lot busier, and like I said, more difficult to get to and not a friendly walking road.
Right,
so it would
right.
be very difficult to actually walk on that road. But looking at where this is in relation to the highway, I could see how she could actually end up there.
Mm-hmm. And you can see how the billboard on the highway would like literally be right in front of his house.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's really close to the Conemaugh River.
Right. Yeah, I was just looking at that.
Yeah.
So while he does live in a neighborhood, and Blairsville itself is not as rural as I thought, although it's mostly houses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of...
Nothing?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of woods around there. Mm-hmm. There's, like you mentioned, the Conemaugh River. There looks like there's a lot of farmland.
All places that should have been searched.
Yes. I mean, there's two national forests right next to Blairsville.
Yeah.
Conemaugh Lake and Loyola Hanna Lake. I mean, yeah, there's tons of places where she could have ended up. I know there's not a whole lot to the investigation that you could find, but ruling out outside possibility, any known serial killers in the area? Was there a rash of kidnappings?
No, nothing like that. You know, the problem is that around this time, going back to the stranger abduction theory, like the highway theory,
yeah,
there were a lot of, or not a lot, but I mean, more than one, like truck drivers who were operating and kidnapping and murdering women at this time.
But not necessarily in this area.
No, not necessarily in this area.
It seems to me that that's an easy way out for John. If he did something, he could very easily have passed it on saying, you know, stranger abduction.
Right.
Or his bonkers theory that she's living with a sultan.
Yeah. A swami.
A swami, sorry.
As he
a swami.
Said. Like,
I don't even know what that is.
No, but I'm like 99.5% sure it's definitely racist.
Yeah. Or at the very least used in the wrong context.
Yeah. We've done over 65 episodes, and, you know, many of these episodes have been of cases that are, you know, relatively old, and it just never ceases to boggle my mind, like, how children are treated. And, you know, unfortunately, this isn't a problem that's been completely eradicated, but Alicia was a child, you know? She wasn't some adult who just decided to leave. but police treated her that way. The press treated her that way. I mean, the very first article that I saw of her was literally like a tiny little sidebar in the paper that was like, local girl runs away. Like, it was just nothing, you know?
Right. And I think it is tragic on several levels that the runaways are treated differently at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. It's not an abduction, or at least not that you know of at right. that point. But if this child had run away, and not just Alicia, I mean, any child mm-hmm. ran away, there's probably a deeper reason why they ran away.
Yeah. There's something not good going on.
Not just like, they'll come back.
Yeah.
Maybe you search for the child, find the child, and then start asking questions of why they ran away, rather than just like, if you find them, take them back to their parents.
Right.
Because chances are they're running away from something in that house. So the investigation into runaways needs to be exactly the same as a missing child. And if they're found, there needs to be more of an investigation as to why they ran away, instead of just turning them back over to their parents.
To that point, NCMEC no longer designates missing children on their website as runaways or Good. Anything else, like, because of the stigma attached to runaways. So many of these endangered missing children are quote unquote runaways, but like, they need to be found. They were in a bad situation. They are in danger. And I don't think that Alicia started out as a runaway at all.
I agree. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I think that if she left the house at all of her own volition, which to me is in question.
Well, I mean, John basically admitted that it was in question.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I guess I can see why the police would say that or yeah. look at me as a suspect.
Well, exactly. And so even if she did, based on everything her mom has said, her friends have said, everything, I think if she did leave, she was planning on coming back. You know, she wasn't choosing to leave.
Yeah. And again, she's 15 years old.
Right.
If she ran away, she would need help to continue to live.
She didn't have that help.
Right.
Because everybody
she
knew.
This is 1987. Yeah. She doesn't have access to money.
No.
1987, like, ATMs were a new thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, let alone having.
And she didn't have a job. Yeah. I never read anything about her having a job. She was a student. She was on the track team. Like, she did not have money.
Right. She didn't have her own connections.
Yeah.
To just run away and start a new life.
No. Though we don't know definitively what happened to Alicia, what we do know is that Marcy was robbed of her only child and, to some extent, her purpose in life. She told the crowd at that 2011 press conference, quote, "I feel like I sometimes don't have a purpose here because I always wanted grandchildren and I always wanted more children, but that never happened," end quote. Marcy doesn't believe that Alicia is alive any longer. She doesn't think that her daughter would have willingly stayed away for all of these years. She knows that nothing is going to bring her daughter back, but hopefully the renewed interest can at least bring her some answers. And ultimately, maybe a little peace. Alicia Markovich has been missing from Blairsville, Pennsylvania since April 26, 1987. She is a white female and was 5'2" and 120 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She had brown hair and blue eyes and was last seen wearing a white crop top with three stripes colored red, yellow, and blue, jeans, and white tennis shoes. Alicia was 15 when she went missing. She would be 49 today. Anyone who has any information on Alicia Markovich's disappearance is urged to call the Pennsylvania State Police at 724-832-3288. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!